Heron for AM 1290.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel, and Diane Duvernay, your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11, and on Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people in Santa Barbara at Figueroa and Anacapa Streets and in Montecito's Upper Village. And Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution. We can be reached at 805-564-1290.
Or you could also email us at moneytalk1290@gmail.com. Neil, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing well. I'm going to walk my dogs an extra three or four times a day for the next 3 days because it's going to rain Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Is that going to work, you think?
Have you decided that you're going to just stop everything and become a meteorologist these days?
Well, you know, between mud flow and my dog walking,
it's a full-time job.
It's a full-time job. Someone's got to do it. Someone's got to do it.
Well, we're thrilled to have in studio with us Mark Melton, who's an attorney, entrepreneur, investor, and travel enthusiast and friend. Thanks for being here, Mark. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
So the first article is actually very timely given what happened with the stock market was down 200 points today. This is at the front page of today's New York Times, so very timely, both in terms of what happened in the market and the fact that it was just in the newspaper. It's entitled, Low Growth, Low Inflation Rut Keeps World Economy Wavering. It looks now, this is the article, that the era of persistently low growth, low inflation, and low interest rates isn't over after all. Generally, the view has been that we went through this period after the 2008 recession and that it was a temporary phenomenon.
And really, the concern has been, you know, inflation and wage growth, and, you know, you need to be concerned with that.
And if you look at the Japanese experience with deflation, which is much more serious a problem than inflation because you can, as Keynes said, you can pull a string, you can't push a string, meaning that you can't stimulate inflation, but you can stop it by raising interest rates. Lowering interest rates doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be able to stimulate the economy. If people don't want to borrow, they're not going to borrow. But the article goes on to say that despite some promising signs of vitality during much of the last year, issues that have dogged the world economy for the last decade, an aging workforce in many of the biggest economies, weak growth in productivity, excessive global savings and industrial capacity, and a shortage of worldwide demand, helps explain why American workers' wages have been rising relatively slowly, despite low unemployment rate. And because interest rates are so low, there's very little room for error, so that if we were to slip into a recession, there's not much you can lower interest rates to create stimulus because right now they're almost, even though they've been raised a number of times, they're still, by historical standards,
extremely low. And the issue there is, you know, the Fed doesn't have many tools in their tool belt. If they can't lower interest rates because we're already at ridiculously low rates, additionally, their balance sheet is pretty high relative to where they normally sit. And so buying bonds in the market to help stimulate is also challenging.
And the second thing, besides all these macroeconomic issues, is China. And, you know, 2 weeks ago, Apple warned that they were going to have less than expected earnings because of weakening in China. And just today, Caterpillar announced weaker earnings, disappointing earnings because of China. There is, you know, we sometimes look, our country looks at China as this evil taker awayer of jobs in America, but the reality is that whether that's true or not, so much of our industry here, 50% of S&P 500 earnings are foreign, and a good deal of that growth has come from China.
Well, and that's what the globalization of our economies have done, is we're all in this together.
So the conclusion of the article was that The global economic problems that we saw for the last 11 years are not going away,
and that a low-growth world, while not terrible, may be the norm. And, you know, with the social unrest that we're seeing across the world, this is not a good thing either for investing or for social stability. On that happy note.
I know. I'm. You know, sometimes you can make these so depressing.
Yeah, but it's nice out. So, it's like Santa Barbara's a good place. You know, the market's down. This article is terrible, but it's nice out. And it's free.
The sunrise was beautiful this morning, if anyone saw it out there.
You were up before the sunrise?
I was, yes.
You're still doing exercise?
I am.
Yeah, I'm very proud of you.
I know. I'm proud of me, too. Yeah. It's early.
Yeah. Diane now weighs 70 pounds.
I wish. No, that would be too small.
So the next article is called Thinning Debt Cushion Worries Investors. And this one was a little upside down, this article. It took me a while to kind of get it. But at the end of last year, roughly 27% of first lien loans, the most senior type of loan, was backed by companies that didn't have any junior debt. Now, what this article is trying to say in English is that historically, you had a corporation that had the highest debt, which was secured by either assets or the company in total, goodwill. And then underneath that, you had subordinated debt that, while it was additional debt, actually helped buffer economic troubles for the first tier of debt, because when a company got into trouble, that secondary debt would take the hit before the secured debt did.
And basically what you would do then is, if you were buying that subordinated debt, you would get a higher interest rate than the original first lien debt.
Exactly.
And so you felt like you were getting paid for the excess risk that you were taking.
So in today's crazy environment, companies don't have to offer secondary debt. They're able to continue to offer first lien debt, which means that people are not getting the kind of interest rate premium they used to get. But more importantly, there's no cushion, because now everybody is in that first tier.
Well, it's more no protection. So there used to be covenants in these loan documents that you would buy the debt, and the covenant would say, you know, we wouldn't issue any more first lien debt. It would all be subordinate. But now basically what happens is they just keep adding more and more first lien debt, which makes the original debtors or creditors, however you want to look at it, in a more risky place.
So now we've had two articles. Each one is...
I can always tell what articles you bring to the table of how your weekend was. A little depressing.
Well, let's look at the headline for the third article. Rocky markets hurt pension plans. And what this article is talking about is the reality that when a company has a defined pension plan where they're paying a fixed amount to its employees based upon an actuarial assumption as to their lifespan, the amount of money that a company has to pay out of their expenses that hit earnings is based upon the actuarial requirement less whatever the stock market gains, because the money for future payments is invested in the stock market. So up until about 3-4 years ago, everyone used to assume it would be 8%. That is, the market would go up 8.5% a year. Now it's been reduced to 7.5% per year because of the 2008 experience. But to the extent that the market does not go up as much as they had assumed, they have to make it up in earnings that by actually hitting their expenses and paying for it. And there's two ways that can happen. Some companies what's called mark-to-market their portfolio of pension assets every year, and that includes Verizon, AT&T, and Ford. That means when the stock market goes down, as it did in 2018, they have to increase their expenses to match what the actuarial need for their pension fund is. And even other companies that don't mark-to-market have to amortize it over a period of time. So when you look at the stock, it's like a circle. You know, you look at earnings, and earnings help to predict stock market results. But if the stock market goes down, then you have to make up for that in your pension fund liabilities by actually reducing your earnings even further by putting money in that you will expect it to be made up by the stock market.
Which is in part why many of these companies no longer have defined benefit plans.
Well, yeah, no one's starting new ones.
That's for sure.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, back about 10, 15 years ago, it was And even years ago when I was a securities analyst, we used to yell and scream because there were such a large amount of unfunded pension liabilities, and it was acceptable. People would say, well, what's the big deal? You know, eventually the stock market will go off. But now people are taking a more serious look, and the accountants actually do want you to mark to market it so that you're not essentially overstating your earnings. And the last article we have today is called Investors Urge to Behave Like Owners. And right now we have a world in which investors really don't care about the company. They don't care about stakeholders. You know, they care about the stock going up. And believe
well, in general, I think people have turned into short-term thinkers. It's hastened by, you know, everybody on social media, and it's 140 characters or 280 characters, whatever it is now. And so people have kind of lost that long-term thinking, whereas true investors, as this article is urging, need to behave like owners, which means with a much longer term view than just a quarterly earnings report.
And it's understandable. If you're a money manager and you say to your client, you know, the bad news is you were down 10% this year, but it's going to be great in 10 years, you're going to get fired. So there's this sort of not just what the investors are being greedy, it's that the people who are running the money really don't have the flexibility to do, quote unquote, the right thing. But what the article goes on to say, which is, I think, really interesting, is that the reality is that by being such a short-term investor, you're not helping the company really perform, because take two companies. Take a drug company that invests in new drug innovation and a company that doesn't. The company that doesn't is going to have higher earnings, because research and development comes right out of
the bottom line.
Right. So, you know, if you only care about the short term, then you will like a company that hasn't invested in R&D, but then the long-term value of that company is not what you would expect it to be. So eventually it comes home to roost. But the second thing is that we end up with this whole tribalization thing we're seeing in social circles around the country, where people are only interested in themselves, and companies aren't reinvesting money in things that will technology and education that will help workers be able to increase their productivity and therefore be able to make more money.
Or change the world, you know, for the better. You know, if you think about if you're pharma and you're not investing in R&D, how are you going to come up with that next drug that's going to cure various forms of cancer?
And, you know, one of the things the article ends by saying is that part of the reason that companies aren't reinvesting money in new ideas is they don't have any new ideas. And one of the things that's so ironic is, as a company increases its dividend, in my view, that sort of admits that they don't have any place to put it, that they can get a higher return than the investor can get. So in a way, you know, high dividend stocks sort of a warning sign, because if you had opportunities, you wouldn't give it away in dividends. Anyway,
I'm glad to see you just kept the downer going throughout all the articles.
I did. But you know what? We're lucky. We have Mark Melton on us, our show.
And it will be uplifting.
It's all going to be fun. It's all going to be good after. You've been listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
They get our kids to school safely.
Okay, so walk me through how you got to this answer.
They provide critical support in the classroom.
Chicken sandwich, my favorite. They keep students nourished so they're ready to learn.
I'm an outie.
They are there when accidents happen.
Oh, you're going to need a Band-Aid.
And they keep our schools beautiful.
School bus drivers, custodians, nurses, paraeducators. Just a few of the education support professionals who help schools in California run smoothly every day. This is David Goldberg, Secretary Treasurer of the California Teachers Association. They ensure that our students have a safe ride to school, healthy meals, and a clean environment to learn. So take a moment to say thank you to the ESPs in your school.
A message from the California Teachers Association.
Cornerstone Home Lending since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner. And we can be reached at 805-564-1290.
Or you could email us at moneytalk1290@gmail.com. If you're just joining us, we have the pleasure of having Mark Melton in studio with us. He's an attorney, entrepreneur, investor, and travel enthusiast. But today we're gonna focus not on the travel, because that could take up 2 hours for
sure. I'd
be
happy to talk about travel.
I know. We're going to talk about the business. And so, Mark, you just started, just finished a project in Santa Barbara. You basically did a AUD, which is a... What is
average unit density.
Average unit density program on Mitchell Terena Street.
Yes.
Tell us about that project and how you came up with the idea, what made you want to do that, and how your experience was.
Well, about 6 years ago, I sold my business that I had built for 15 years called Coverall. And as part of building Coverall, I had started investing in commercial real estate, basically buying offices to lease to my own company so that we, you
like
know,
a good business owner.
Exactly.
Renting from yourself.
Before you go, tell us what is Coverall?
So Coverall is a national janitorial franchising company. And I was a master franchise. I had basically six Western states. So I had offices in California, Hawaii, Utah. And what we did is we sold franchises and help people start their own commercial cleaning company. And what's interesting about that business is we actually also get the accounts. So most franchises, like we also, my wife and I own Molly Maid. In fact, that's why we originally moved to Santa Barbara 25 years ago. But usually when you buy a franchise, you have to go out and get your own customers, build your own business. But with janitorial franchising, what's more common is the company that sells you the franchise also guarantees you a certain customer base. And so then we also hire sales reps who go out and call on companies, get the contracts to provide janitorial services, and then basically sub them out to the franchisees. So I did that for 15 years, built that up. And I was fortunate because Coverall North America, who was sort of the mother franchise, I owned a couple of markets that they really wanted, L.A. and San Francisco, and which frankly were not the best markets, by the way. Honolulu and Salt Lake City were the best markets, but they got those two.
Well, do you mean to travel to, or do you mean just in general?
Okay, so the funny thing is I love going to Hawaii, and what I would always do whenever I would go there is I would always have at least one weekend where I'd go to one of the other islands, you know, so mm-hmm. I got to know Hawaii pretty well. But it used to drive me crazy because I'm over there working, and people would call me up, and they don't know. They think you're in California, so they call you up at the wrong time of day anyway. And then they all have the same response, like, oh, well, you're having fun over there? No, I'm working. That's why.
Oh, come on. It's better than going to, like, Alaska in the dead of winter, right?
That's true. But we live in Santa Barbara, so.
True. It's pretty nice here.
Anyway, so to make a long story longer, but I sold Coverall, and as you know, Diane, because right. You have been helping with me with my money, and I decided to get into other kinds of real estate investing, and I liked the idea. I did a little bit of research, decided to get into multifamily housing and buying apartments. So originally, you're probably familiar with the Hayes Commercial Group here in Santa Barbara. I work with Christos, and I bought a 12-unit old Victorian-style building on Mitchell Terena. And it had 12 units. And I looked over the fence one day, and there's this other lot adjoining us. It's on Castillo, which was a derelict building. So I thought, I wonder who owns that. And So to make a long story short, I bought that, put the two lots together, and then under this AUD program, which, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about in the city, at least for people who do development, we were able to tear down the old buildings on Castillo. We tore down one of the buildings that was on Mitchell Terena. We built four new buildings. So in addition to fixing up the old historic buildings, we built four new ones. So now we have a total of six and 21 apartment units. Some of them are townhouses. We have three townhouses, two-story. We have one standalone house in the front of Castillo. I was telling Diane earlier that one of the reasons we were so successful of getting through the planning commission was we made our project very appropriate for the neighborhood. And then on Castillo, rather than put like an ugly apartment building, we put basically a house that looks almost exactly like the other, you know, Victorian houses that are on either side of us. And so they love that. And so if you're driving down Castillo, you don't even know that there are apartments behind it.
Well, and I think that that was very savvy of you, given the climate of the historical preservation, is it committee or panel or whoever you have to go in front of to get your project approved for the aesthetics of it all.
Right.
They appreciate that attention to detail and making it neighborhood appropriate for Santa Barbara, especially being in that downtown corridor.
Exactly.
You're the first person that I have come across in the real estate development business here that has had a nice thing to say about the process. Do you think that it was because of what you said and therefore it's replicable, that as other people could get through, or and therefore the reputation that this is about the worst place you can be to develop is overstated, or do you think you were sort of just lucky?
Or is he just that charming?
I've never heard anyone say it was easy.
Well, did I say it was easy?
I'm sure you said it was easy.
The first part, getting the basic project approved and through the not the planning commission, it's the architectural review board or whatever it's called. That was – we were lucky. I mean, I think because we came with something appropriate, I told Diane, we actually went in – I shouldn't say this out loud, but I will. One of our original buildings we had was three stories, knowing that it wouldn't get approved. So that's okay. So then they came back and said, no, can you make that two stories more? I'm like, all right. So when we went back the second time, you know, they basically – we did all the changes they asked for. So they didn't have any reason not to approve us. Now, we did have some challenges with the city later, and I'd be happy to talk to you about in terms of other issues like, requiring us to have the stormwater runoff drainage system and a lot of other, you know, ADA compliance and putting up a street light on Castillo where there was already a street light. I mean, things like that. So it was not easy, but we got it done.
And so when you think about going back on your experience of this one, not only this one, but the project that you did previously in Santa Barbara in the downtown corridor, would you do it again?
Probably not.
No.
It's been really stressful. And I think it's kind of like I tell you, but it's sort of like giving birth. I think maybe I need to like have a little distance from it.
You know, the difference is hormones in women make us forget. I'm not sure there's anything that you can do to forget.
And I think I'd like to start seeing some income from it. Right. And then maybe I'll feel different. I actually own some property over by the high school on Anapamu that I think might also be appropriate for future development. But honestly, at this point, I think I just need to take a break and get these.
You need to go on a trip or something.
I need to get lost for a while. Yeah.
And speaking of breaks, we're going to take one. You're listening to Money Talk on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Jeff Devine from American Riviera Bank. All of our customers were once just like you, stuck with a bank that kept charging more for less. But when they finally made the decision to change banks, American Riviera Bank made the move easy with mobile deposit, online banking, free use of every ATM in the country, and a level of customer service that other banks dream of. Come in and make the move today in our downtown Santa Barbara or Montecito Upper Village branches. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people.
As a parent, it's what you do. You protect your children.
You teach them how to brush their teeth.
How to wash their hands.
To look both ways when crossing the street.
You take them to the doctor when they're sick.
And you vaccinate them.
And you vaccinate them.
And you vaccinate them.
I didn't know there was a vaccine for meningococcal meningitis, and my daughter died.
And my daughter died.
And my daughter died.
There wasn't a vaccine to protect against strain B meningococcal disease when my daughter died.
When my daughter died.
When my daughter died.
But now there is.
Just get the facts and vaccinate. It's the right thing to do.
Please visit nmaus.org.
A public service message from the National Meningitis Association. Our website, nmaus.org, has details about the two vaccines that protect preteens and teens. That's www.nmaus.org.
These days, it's easy to have information overload. Sometimes I just want to kick back, hear my favorite music and the news that affects me. That's why I stay tuned into my local radio station. When important news happens in my part of town, I hear it from them first. For the best entertainment, sports, news, weather, and traffic, anytime, anywhere, I stay local. Support your local stations. Text RADIO to 52886. Furnished by the NAB and this station. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out.
Welcome back to Money Talk. Brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And if you would like to reach us, we can be reached at 805-564-1290. And we have, if you're just joining us, Mark Melton in studio, and we're talking about his Drake Forest Investment LLC, which is his company that has these properties available in Santa Barbara to rent. So are they available currently? Have you rented them all at this point, or do you have some availability?
No, we just got our certificate of occupancy the first week in January.
Oh,
so they're
great.
Available. We have a lot of inventory. We have a single family house. We have three two bedroom, two and a half bath townhouses. We have two bedroom apartments. We have one bedroom apartments. We have a nice selection of
So there are some vacancies. So if you're looking, you should give us a call.
So when people tell you that there's no apartments in Santa Barbara to rent, they're wrong.
So do we have a caller?
We do.
Perfect. Hi, caller. Thanks for calling.
Samantha? Hi. This is Samantha. I'm looking for an apartment right now. Who should I contact?
Oh, who should Samantha contact if she's looking for a property at this point?
Our property manager is handling all the rentals. His name is Steve Donarovich. His company is RPM. The best way to find that, if you go to the website, drakeforest.com, you can see the phone number. You can see pictures of the property and so forth. Drakeforest.com.
Oh, that's perfect.
Oh,
now, are
you
also listing them on Trulia or one of the online websites?
Yes. Yeah, all those.
Perfect.
So how come you did this as a rental rather than as a condominium?
Well, we bought originally, the idea was to invest in multifamily housing and have, for my wife and I, sort of a retirement income, something steady. And in Santa Barbara.
Almost like the pensions we were talking about.
Yeah, fairly predictable. And I think Santa Barbara real estate, the downside of Santa Barbara trying to buy apartments is finding them at a good price. You know, the cap rates, you guys familiar with cap rates, on them are pretty low. I mean, normally it's maybe 3%, 3.5% in this town. So, but it's steady. And the other thing I thought about is it's a good inflation hedge. So in addition to having financial assets, I thought having some real estate long term would be good. The properties that I bought were apartments. To convert them, I'm not really sure what the process of converting them into condominiums would be, but from what I understand, it's not easy. So I didn't really consider the idea of trying to convert or add condominiums. It just made more sense to me to just add more apartments to the mix.
Well, and it seemed as if that was what was part of your financial plan of creating that steady income into retirement as opposed to getting a big pop at the end of your project.
Right. My wife and I have owned businesses for many years, and we have this joke among ourselves. We say we're looking for the perfect business, the one with no customers and no employees, but it makes a lot of money. And we thought that maybe owning apartments with a property manager to handle renting and dealing with the tenants would be about as close as we could come to reaching that ideal. So that was kind of our thought process.
So talk about, can you talk a little bit about or explain a little bit about the benefits and challenges of investing in rental property? You know, both economic and returns. Like, what are you looking for when you go and evaluate your property? If somebody out there is listening and is thinking about getting it, doing something like what you did,
yeah,
what are those economic benefits and what type of returns are you looking for?
Well, I think one of the key benefits, as you probably know, is the with depreciation. Even though you can have sort of tax-free cash flow in a way, in other words, you can have a property that, you know, on paper doesn't really make much money because all your income is basically offset by the depreciation. And if you do, I'm blanking on it, but there's a process by which you hire accountants to basically go back and they specify the assets.
Like amortize the...
Yeah, they separate the amortization out, and so they can front load a lot of the amortization. They can identify the elements of... the property that have faster depreciation. So you can get a lot of depreciation up front, and then the rest of it goes over 27 and a half years. So I think that to me is the advantage of having sort of a steady income. There's fairly low vacancy rates in Santa Barbara, so I think it's pretty low risk. But as I said, the returns are fairly low in terms of cap rates. So it's typically 3.5%. And usually you look at sort of what apartments are going for. They're going for anywhere these days, depending on, you know, the cash flow from the thing, something like 400. I was talking to one of the brokers the other day and saying there's some properties they're asking $500,000 per unit, per door. So they're getting pretty expensive. And so can you actually, you know, make a return on your investment? And it gets pretty challenging at that point. So you have to look for, I think, properties that you can improve and add value to. So that's kind of what I did with these Drake Forest apartments is, you know, we had 12 units. We fixed them all up. We added more units to the same land. And I think hopefully that way we can get our return on investment up.
Well, one of the areas that needs housing in this city is workplace housing. Mm-hmm. How do your rents fit into that group, that demographic? Is this affordable for workplace?
So, you know, I have to clarify that question, because what does workplace mean? You know, because in Santa Barbara, when we talk about workforce housing, the monetary amount that people make is so low that it's actually kind of affordable. I don't even know where those lines go.
Well, I'll tell you where. We had a year ago the chairman of Deckers on, and he said, you know, his company was like an employment agency, a training ground. They would get somebody, they work there for 5 years, they make $90,000 or $100,000 a year, and have to leave because they couldn't afford a place to live. It's someone who's 30 years old, making really good money for any other city, and can't find a place to live here that's affordable. I mean, that's a real need here.
Right, that's not a dump.
Yeah.
No, but there's also another definition of affordable housing, and I think it's 75% of the median income, I think, is the technical definition. I think to answer your question, no, my properties are probably not what you would consider affordable or low-cost housing. And frankly, I think absent having some kind of government assistance, I don't know how you do it, because by the time you spend the millions of dollars it costs to buy the land, the millions of dollars to develop the property, you know, you go through all the permitting and all that sort of thing, it's super expensive. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the arguments can be that, you know, I think, and I heard this when I went to some of the Planning Commission meetings, no AUD units so far, like the Mark and other ones who have come online, are not low cost, and mine isn't either. But what that does, I think, is it does increase the supply, and it takes pressure off, because what happens, a lot of these people who can afford the more expensive units are renting the cheaper ones, and so, or the less quality ones, let's say, and so it's driving up the price on less quality ones. So I think by having these units come on the market, it's going to relieve some of the pressure on other older units, and therefore the price, you won't see the prices go up so much.
In fact, you're already seeing. And after the break, I'd like to ask you the other need besides, you know, affordable work housing is student housing, and that's mm-hmm. a way that a lot of developers are trying to increase their return by, you know, essentially renting beds. Mm-hmm. But we'll have to wait for that. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
Are you ready to start and run your own successful business? Ready to grow your small business or home business? Women's Economic Ventures is a local nonprofit helping women start and build successful businesses. In addition to their highly successful self-employment training program, Weave offers services to help women succeed at every stage of their business, from startup and launch to building and sustaining a business, including individual business counseling, professional networking events, advanced business training, and small business loans to start or expand a business. Over 1,000 local businesses are now owned and operated by women who have taken part in programs and services. Whether you're ready to start up, launch, build, or sustain your business, Women's Economic Ventures is right here to help you make it happen. Call 965-6073 or visit weaveonline.org.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by American Riviera Bank, making your life easier with cutting-edge technology, mobile deposits, free use of every ATM machine in the country, and a level of service other banks can only dream about.
So you had a question, you said.
So workplace housing is one area. The other was student housing, where there are developers who specialize in that, and they pack up these apartments with beds, and they get a higher return. That, I assume, is not for you.
No. It's not. In fact, it's interesting. My property manager, Steve, wanted to do a test about a year and a half or 2 years ago, and because he was aware of some other people who were doing that. So he took one of our apartments, and he furnished it at his expense. He said, I'm just doing this as a test and to see. And his idea was what you're saying, and kind of rent the beds. And he abandoned it after a little bit. I think it's a specialized area, but it's controversial, as you know, because, you know, when that last one changed hands, the company comes in, they gentrify it, they fix it up, they let all the people who were renting there out, and so now all of a sudden they don't have a place to live, and so it kind of sucks up some of the lower cost property, and that's kind of a challenge I find interesting is, you know, gentrification has sort of a bad sound, but on the other hand, you know, they beat up on Dario Pini, right? Because,
right.
You know, I mean, so, okay, at the one extreme, you don't want to be a slumlord. At the other end of the extreme, you know, they want you to fix up the property. So it's almost like, well, they want you to fix it up, but not too nice. You know what I mean?
Right. It's a fine line. Well, I think we have a caller. Let's see. Hi, Laura.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you so much. I have a question for your guest. I have a Prius. Do your apartments have electric car charging stations?
Yes, they don't at the moment. We just got open, but we're in the process of installing them, and we will have the ability to have up to 16 electric car charging stations. I think electric cars are sort of the wave of the future, and so we wanted to make sure that we had the infrastructure in place.
Wow, 16, that's a lot. That's great.
Yeah, we're going to start with two.
Right.
And then we'll see as people rent the things. We already have the conduit and all the wiring and all the all the electronic infrastructure you need.
And so
that's just a matter of adding.
Will there be an additional fee for those people that use the charging stations?
So the company that we selected is called ChargePoint, and so whoever does that will have to sign up for a ChargePoint account, and they have to pay for the electricity that they use.
Oh, okay. Well, that's great. It's wonderful that you have that capability. Yeah, I do agree. I think it is the wave of the future.
Yeah, one of the other interesting features of the AUD program is because what they're trying to do is encourage higher density people living, working downtown, they allow us to only have one car parking space per apartment unit, but they also required covered bicycle parking. So we have gorgeous bicycle parking available. So it's kind of a mixed use. It's sort of a little more futuristic in the sense that we have electric car charging, we'll have bicycle parking, that sort of thing.
And now, do you get credits or anything along the lines of that as a developer who puts those things in place for these high density buildings?
No, I haven't. Edison does have a program where they will share the cost of installing the infrastructure for electric car charging.
Okay.
Unfortunately, it's kind of a chicken and the egg thing. You know, it's like you have to have tenants who are demanding it, and I don't yet have enough tenants.
Right.
So it's like, well,
you just opened. Give yourself
right,
a break.
I know. But it's like, well, do I wait to put the infrastructure in until I can prove, you know? So I just decided to go ahead and put the infrastructure in place and so we can have it because I think the kind of when we started the construction, we had some tenants who were asking us, are you going to have electric car charging? Because they were interested in getting electric cars.
Huh. Interesting. So, you know, share with us some of your challenges with developing and building these properties within the city. You know, you always hear the horror stories, and we touched on it a little bit before. But what would you say Santa Barbara does great, and what would you say that some of the challenges, if somebody were listening, could you share something that would help them avoid that challenge in the future?
Well, I think the first hurdle is the Architectural Review Board. And I think if you go to them with something appropriate, I think, you know, for us, it was not hard. And I think it was because we went to something that looked like the neighborhood, made sense, and so it was easy to get an approval from them. There are so many elements to it, and one of the things that's a little bit frustrating is all of them sort of each one makes sense kind of on its own, but when sort of aggregated, it becomes overwhelming. Like you understand, okay, handicap access, okay, got that. Understand why that's important. So, but that adds a significant expense, right?
Oh.
And then there's stormwater runoff. They don't want water going out into the street when it rains. Okay, but then you have to engineer these elaborate retention ponds, and that's expensive. And
now, even though they didn't have those, you know, because it's not like you were developing a raw piece of land.
Right.
They were already units of some variety when you purchased it.
Right.
You still had to have storm runoff drainage. Didn't the properties already have some or not before?
No. And I mean, they were just like all of our neighbors. I mean,
right.
Basically, it rains, the water runs down the street
right.
and out to the ocean, and that's it. But no, our water, you know, is all going to stay on the property. We have nice retention basins, but unfortunately.
And what do you do with the retention basins?
Well, instead of having a nice looking front yard with lawn and so forth like that, no, we have these retention basins that when it rains, they become ponds. And when, you know, after a few days, it kind of settles down.
And
I mean, they're planted and so forth. I mean, they
right.
don't look horrible.
So on this subject, when you build a property, you have a construction loan. And the construction loan is based upon an assumption as to what it's going to cost you. And, you know, the equity part is also obviously part of that calculation. When you go into the city and then you go out of the city 2-3 years later, how far off is the number that you assumed? And how do you work with your bank or are they, because they're from this community, add some buffer because they know things are not going to be exactly as you anticipated?
So the, you know, when you get a construction loan, as you know, I mean, one of the things I discovered having been sort of a first-time developer in this case, I understand now why banks want to work with people who have done this before, because I learned a lot that I didn't know. I kind of went in with a bit of hubris, thinking, oh, I'm smart enough, I can build stuff, and I learned a lot. And yeah, I mean, part of it is you have a contingency budget, right? And so they make sure that you've got, usually it's at least 10-20% contingency set aside for things that you that could come up. And there's a lot of things that will come up. You know, for example, I didn't know this, but when you do excavation, there's what they call a rocks clause, which means when you start digging up the dirt, if they find big boulders, that's not included. And, you know, there's a cost of getting those big boulders, you know, out of the property. And, of course, all the other things that come up. So that's normally the way. Plus, then what they're looking for is, for you, is what other financial cushion do you have, so that when costs go above what's even available in the construction loan and the contingency budget, do you still have money available to finish this project? So,
were you able to get a loan without a personal guarantee?
Oh, no. No. I don't think that exists anymore, does it?
Well, Donald Trump did it for years. Is that, you mean things have changed since then?
I don't – well, I'm not Donald Trump.
You're better off, probably.
Well, but, you know, but, that, but that's – you know, that's a really interesting point, that if you're going to be a first-time developer, you need to have – you need to be willing to do a personal guarantee. So here you are. You spend all these years developing a company. You finally sell it out. And now you're going to do something new, and you're going to put up a personal guarantee. That took a lot of guts or confidence or
– Insanity.
Insanity. Wasn't that – was that a big issue?
No, because, I mean, the thing I've always felt with owning businesses is, yes, you're taking a risk, but – I guess I've been successful, and part of the way I've been is, you know I'm going to stick with it and do whatever it takes to make it work. So I'm not worried about getting halfway through and it not finishing or not being able to rent the thing out or whatever. So maybe I have an excess of confidence, but no, I wasn't worried about taking on a personal loan. I mean, if nothing else, I can always sell the property, right, and, you know, pay off the loan. And I've got – and the other thing is, you know, they require that – they're only going to make you a loan for about half the value. Right. So you've got to have the other half, in essence, already invested in the property, because they're not going to loan you – it's not like buying a house. You don't get 80 or 90% loans. It's like 50% loans.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
Hi, I'm Jeff Devine from American Riviera Bank. All of our customers were once just like you, stuck with a bank that kept charging more for less. But when they finally made the decision to change banks, American Riviera Bank made the move easy with mobile deposit, online banking, free use of every ATM in the country, and a level of customer service that other banks dream of. Come in and make the move today in our downtown Santa Barbara or Montecito Upper Village branches. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
Come on, people. Think about it.
It's time to pay attention.
Mortgage industry is not rocket science.
Your guide to the information you can use to choose the best answers to your real estate financing questions.
Join me Tuesdays at 2 p.m., 10 p.m., and Sundays at noon.
Your guy in the mortgage industry, Guy Rivera.
Tune in to 1290 AM, Santa Barbara News Press radio station. For 16 years on State and Islay, I'm Guy Rivera, your guy in the mortgage industry.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
So I always say, Mark, that with if you're in your retirement years, you're going to do development, that you should always do it close to home because you want to do it, or at least someplace you want to go often, because you have to be present in order to make it work. How often do you think you need to actually drive by and see what's going on, even with a property manager?
That is one of the things I learned on this project, is if you're going to be an owner, you have to be there all the time. I thought, because I had a large contractor who was the general on it, and my architect then was going, I signed a contract with him to sort of manage the contractor and be there. And they both did a fine job, but even still, the thing sort of went off the rails at various times. And finally, I went on one of my trips. We went up to the Arctic, and we drove back down. That's part of my trip down to Argentina, but that's another story.
I know we haven't even touched on the fun stories like that.
Anyway, but the point is, what I learned is you're absolutely right. If you're going to do this kind of investing, do it somewhere where you can be there all the time and be involved and be on the site. The last 5-6 months of this project, I was literally there as a full-time job. And I just took one of the apartments, made it my office, took my laptop down there, and I was just on it every day. And I think that made all the difference in the world.
And they were probably very happy to see you there, weren't they?
I don't think they were unhappy to see me. I think they were glad because, you know, somebody who can make decisions.
Right. And then they don't have to wait for the decision to be run up the flagpole.
Yeah. Well, part of the thing is in my contractor, they went through a series of superintendents, which was part of the problem. And so there wasn't sort of that institutional memory of like, well, why did we do this or how did we get here? You know what I mean? So
it's, right. Which I have to imagine on projects is very common as people move and change jobs and do whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
So you were on property making those day-to-day decisions. How long from start to finish did the project take?
It took about 14 months, 15 months, something like that.
So that's not too bad.
Originally it was supposed to take 7.
Well, you knew that was a farce. I think I told you that even when you told me you were doing
it. So you're an attorney. How much did that help, that the whole knowledge of the law help in this project?
It helped a little. It's a very different kind of thing, developing property, I found. And also my expertise is not construction law. I'm a franchise lawyer primarily and do transactional business law. But it helps. I mean, obviously there are contracts that have to be entered into and different things that you're doing. But I'm more transactional. I don't want to get into litigation and things like that. So my approach is always, hey, let's work this thing out, as opposed to let's make this a problem.
Let's make your attorney really rich.
Yeah, exactly.
So as you know, you have vacancies available on the Mitchell Terrena, the new project, which is basically moving into a brand new house, even if you have a renovated one, which is rare to find in this town. And so you're looking for tenants at this point.
Yep.
What do you see next on your horizon?
Vacation. I was going to say, I want to drive. We've done the Arctic Ocean down to Santa Barbara. We still have to do Mexico, Central America, and then South America in my Land Cruiser. So that's the next.
Thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure.
Congratulations on the finished project. You've been listening to Money Talk. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.